All right, let's dive in. Today, we're tackling Zechariah, right? His prophecies. We're picking up where we left off, chapters 7 through 14 this time.
Yeah, we're going deep.
Deep dive, you know. And this is where it gets really interesting. Like, Zechariah, he's not just talking about, like, coming back from exile.
Right.
It's more than that, right?
Right.
He's pointing towards this, like, two-stage restoration, a return beyond the return, they call it.
It's true. He's really building on what we see in Jeremiah, in Daniel, those earlier prophets, this idea that the future, it's bigger than just going back home.
Okay, so how does it start? So the people, they come to Zechariah and they're asking him about fasting. Should we keep doing, you know, to remember Jerusalem? They're basically like, hey, prophet, so is the exile over or what?
Yeah, they're looking for clarity, some kind of sign. But Zechariah, I mean, he's speaking for God here, right? He throws a curveball.
Okay, I'm listening.
He doesn't just say yes or no. He makes them think, challenges them, really, about how they view repentance.
Oh, interesting.
It's not just about going through the motions. It's a heart thing, a change from the inside out.
This makes me think about some of those other prophets, right, like Amos or Isaiah, those fiery guys.
Right, right.
Calling people out for empty rituals. Let justice roll down like waters. I mean, come on, that's powerful stuff. It's not enough to just fast, right?
Exactly. It has to impact your life, how you live, how you treat others. And it makes you think, doesn't it, about what those empty rituals might be for us today? I mean, what are we doing that's just for show?
Ooh, that's a good way.
Yeah.
But back to Zechariah, chapter 8. Things start to feel hopeful. We get these vivid pictures, right? Old people hanging out, kids playing, the city bustling. This is more than just rebuilding. This is thriving.
And it's right there in the middle of all that hope. This key verse pops up. Should it also be marvelous in my sight? God's speaking here, and it's like he's saying, you think this rebuilding is amazing? Just wait. You haven't seen anything yet.
No kidding. And then, get this, people from all over the world, he says they'll come to Jerusalem seeking God, like this huge shift from conquered nation to global center of worship.
It's huge. It shows how God's plans, they have this ripple effect. It's not just about one nation anymore.
That's wild. But, you know, the source material mentions this debate about who actually wrote the book, right? Some scholars think those later chapters, 9 through 14, maybe a different author or written much later.
Yeah, it's a common discussion. And you can see why. The tone shifts, the style changes a bit. You could almost think it's two different books stuck together.
Right. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Zechariah just had different writing styles. Depending on what he was saying, you know?
That's possible. Like a novelist, right? Their early work compared to their later stuff. Style evolves, but it's still their voice. The source seems to lean towards one author, but it acknowledges the whole debate.
Okay, so whether it's one Zechariah or two, we've got this story, right? This return beyond the return. It's like Act 1 was just the beginning. What happens in Act 2?
Well, that's when things get really interesting. We start to see these messianic prophecies pointing to a future where God's power, his presence, it's undeniable, not just for Israel, but for everyone.
Wow. So it's more than bricks and mortar, more than going back to a piece of land. This is about a total transformation. Everything changes.
Exactly. And it makes you think, doesn't it? What returns are we waiting for in our own lives, in the world? What needs that undeniable touch from God, that sense of everything being made right?
Deep stuff. Definitely something to think about. But okay, let's get specific, right? The source material dives into one of those prophecies about the Messiah. Zechariah 9.9, the king coming humbly, riding a donkey. Sound familiar?
Oh yeah, the classic Palm Sunday imagery. The source makes that connection, but then it points out something really interesting.
What's that?
The full victory that Zechariah describes, it doesn't actually happen then. There's this delay.
A delay? What's the deal with that?
Well, the prophets, they saw the big picture, right? The Messiah coming, evil defeated. But the timeline wasn't always clear. They didn't always distinguish between Jesus's first coming and the second.
Ah, okay. Like seeing a mountain range from far away. You see the peaks, but you miss the valleys in between. Speaking of valleys, Zechariah takes us through a pretty emotional one in chapter 11. This whole shepherd thing, right? A prophetic sign act. Yeah. He's the shepherd, but the people reject him.
And it gets worse. The details, it really foreshadows what happens to Jesus, how humanity rejects God's leadership over and over.
Okay, tell me more.
So, Zechariah, they give him 30 pieces of silver, the price of a slave, basically, for his shepherding. It's like they're saying, your leadership, worthless to us.
Brutal. And then, wait, 30 pieces of silver. Isn't that what Judas gets for betraying Jesus?
It is. It's that same dynamic playing out, but it goes deeper than that, doesn't it? It's like Zechariah, he's showing us this pattern. Humanity keeps choosing corrupt leaders, selfish desires, over God's way.
Yeah, that's heavy. And the rejection, it's not just about Zechariah. It impacts everything.
Yeah.
Their relationship with God, with each other.
Right. And then there's this moment of grace, of mercy. They see the one they pierced, they mourn. True repentance, realizing what they've done.
So even in all this mess, there's still hope. It's not just doom and gloom.
Exactly. It's not just escaping punishment. It's about experiencing God's love fully, being in right relationship with him. But it makes you think, right, who are we following? Who are the worthless shepherds in our own lives?
Ooh, good question.
It's not just about presidents and politicians. It's about anyone who influences us, shapes our thinking. Maybe it's those voices online, you know, telling us what to think, what to feel, or those cultural trends that pull us away from God's truth.
Okay, I see what you mean. We got to be careful who we listen to, who we let lead us.
Exactly. We're called to follow the right shepherd, the one who leads to life, to wholeness.
So much to think about. Zechariah, man, he's got a lot to say. We've got this vision of restoration, but also this warning. But how does it all play out? What does this return beyond the return actually look like?
He gives us details, specific details about the transformation. And it's not just for Israel. The whole world changes. But for that, you'll have to wait for our grand finale.
Okay, so act two of this Zechariah drama. You said something about a cosmic showdown, right?
Oh, yeah. Things get pretty epic. In chapters 12 and 14, Zechariah describes all these nations. They come marching against Jerusalem. It's like this ultimate battle, good versus evil.
Sounds intense. So does God just wipe them out?
That's the thing. It's not that simple. He uses this invasion like a refining fire for Israel. It's almost like, okay, I brought you back, but you haven't quite learned your lesson. Time for a cosmic wake-up call.
A wake-up call. So it's not a straightforward victory.
No, it's more like God using this conflict to purify his people, to get their attention.
Okay, but God doesn't just abandon them, right?
Yeah. Oh, no. He intervenes big time. But here's the twist. The enemy nations, the ones who attack Jerusalem, they don't get destroyed. They become the remnant, the ones left to worship the Lord.
Wait, what? That's a plot twist I didn't see coming. The enemies become the worshipers. So God's grace, it extends even to them.
It does. It's like a reminder that God's plans, they're bigger than we can imagine. His ways are higher than our ways, like Isaiah said.
Yeah, it makes you think twice about who we label as enemies, right?
Right.
Maybe there's always hope for change.
Always hope. But, okay, let's not get too far ahead. There's more to unpack in Zechariah's prophecy. Remember those worthless shepherds he keeps talking about? That whole theme of bad leadership goes way back to prophets like Ezekiel.
Those guys were always calling out corrupt leaders. But why is this important in Zechariah's book?
Well, it seems like bad leadership, it was a big problem back then. And these shepherds, they represent anyone in power who abuses it, exploiting people, not caring for them.
So not just literal shepherds, right? It could be anyone.
Anyone. Anyone who puts their own interests above the people they're supposed to be serving.
Okay, I see the connection. But Zechariah, he doesn't just talk about it. He does this whole prophetic sign act, right? With the staffs.
Yes. He becomes the shepherd carrying these two staffs.
Yeah.
One named favor, the other union. They represent God's blessing and the unity of his people.
Right, right. It's like he's showing them what good leadership looks like. Someone who cares, who guides them.
Exactly. But then the people reject him. They choose to stick with their corrupt leaders over the one who embodies God's care.
Seriously, they reject him. What happens then?
Zechariah breaks those staffs, favor and union. The covenant broken, God's blessing lost, the people divided. It's powerful stuff.
Wow, their rejection, it has these huge consequences, not just for Zechariah, but for everyone.
Exactly. And then, to add insult to injury, they pay him 30 pieces of silver for his shepherding, the price of a slave.
Ouch. That's like saying God's leadership, it's worthless to us. They totally missed the point.
It's tragic. And it foreshadows what happens to Jesus, right? Those 30 pieces of silver, the price of betrayal.
Oh, wow. You're right. It's the same pattern. Humanity rejecting God's leadership over and over, choosing their own way.
It's a tough truth to face. But remember that moment of grace we talked about?
Yeah.
Where they see the one they pierce, they mourn. That's the turning point. Recognizing their mistake, longing for reconciliation.
Right, that glimmer of hope. So even in all this brokenness, redemption is still possible.
Absolutely. It's about more than just escaping punishment. It's about experiencing God's love, being in right relationship with him, But it raises the question, doesn't it? Who are the worthless shepherds in our lives? Who are we following?
That's a good one. It's not just about politics, right? It's about anyone we let influence us, the voices we listen to, the trends we follow.
Exactly. We have to be discerning. Are we following those who reflect God's character? Or are we settling for those who offer empty promises, who exploit us?
Okay, so we've got this vision of restoration, but also this warning. But how does it all end? What does this return beyond the return actually look like? Does Zechariah give us any specifics?
He does, and it's amazing. He talks about Jerusalem transformed, the whole world changed, living water, a city without walls, even the horses' bells will be holy. But for that, they'll have to wait for the grand finale.
Okay, I'm ready for the grand finale. Spill the beans. What does Zechariah say about this return beyond the return? What does this amazing future actually look like?
Oh, get ready for some seriously symbolic imagery. Zechariah paints this incredible picture of a world totally transformed. Remember those nations, the ones who invaded Jerusalem, ended up worshiping the Lord?
Yeah, the enemies turned worshipers. What happens to them in this new world?
So they actually join Israel in celebrating the Feast of Booths, you know, that festival where they build those little huts, remembering their time in the wilderness, totally dependent on God.
Right, right. So it's not just about Israel being restored. It's about all nations coming together, recognizing God's provision, celebrating that shared dependence.
Exactly. It's like this beautiful tapestry, all these different people, different cultures woven together under God's kingdom. But wait, there's more. Zechariah describes this cosmic battle, good versus evil, the ultimate showdown. The Lord stands on the Mount of Olives, and get this, the mountain splits in two, creating this valley of escape for God's people.
Whoa, hold on. The Mount of Olives splits into. Talk about a dramatic entrance. But why? What's the point of this earthquake thing?
It's all about God's intervention. He rescues his people, this incredible display of power. Like, he's saying, nothing can stand against me. I'm in control.
It's like something out of a movie, right? All those special effects.
Yeah.
So after this epic showdown, what happens then? What's life like in this restored world?
Okay, picture this. Jerusalem, a city without walls. Totally open, accessible to everyone. Living water flows from the city, symbolizing God's blessings. And get this, even the horses' bells will have "Holy to the Lord" inscribed on them.
Wow, so even the little things, the everyday stuff, it all reflects God's presence. It's like a total makeover for everything.
Exactly. It's this vision of a world where God's glory just permeates everything. Peace, justice, everywhere.
It's mind-blowing. All the brokenness, the pain, it's all healed, made right. But here's the thing. This is the return beyond the return, right? We're not there yet. So what does it mean for us now?
That's the big question, isn't it? Zechariah makes us wrestle with that. We're living in this in-between time. We've tasted God's grace, his redemption through Jesus, but we're still waiting for the fullness of his kingdom.
It's like we've seen the trailer, but the movie hasn't come out yet. We've got a glimpse, but not the whole picture.
Exactly. But just like those who return from exile, we hold on to the promise. God is faithful. He brought them back. He fulfilled his promises then, and he will fulfill his promise to restore everything.
It's good to remember that, especially when we look around and, well, things are kind of messed up. It's easy to get discouraged.
Yeah.
But Zechariah reminds us, God's still working, even when we can't see it.
He is. He's a God of restoration, of second chances, bringing beauty out of ashes.
And his prophecies, they're not just about predicting the future. They're about shaping how we live now.
Right, right. We're called to live in light of that coming day, to be agents of restoration, of healing, to be part of making God's vision a reality.
So it's not just sitting around waiting for God to fix everything. It's about working with him, being part of that restoration project.
Exactly. And that brings us back to Zechariah's challenge. Examine our hearts, reject those worthless shepherds. Who are we following? Because if we're going to be part of God's work, we need to make sure we're following the right shepherd, the one who leads to life, to wholeness.
Wow. What a journey. Zechariah, he's full of surprises. Thanks for walking us through all of this. It's been eye-opening for sure.
My pleasure. Zechariah's book, it's always a joy to explore. So much depth, so much to discover.
And listeners, we hope this deep dive is giving you some new insight, something to think about. God's always working. He's a God of restoration, of second chances. So as you go about your week, look for those signs of hope, those glimpses of God's kingdom breaking through. And join in the adventure. Be part of making his vision a reality.